Hi, I'm Sean Healy, and you're listening to Tools. Hi, everyone. Sean Healy, personal change agent here, and welcome to episode 35 of Sean Healy Tools, a podcast designed to support entrepreneurial couples, people in business partnership, and anyone looking for more tips, tools, and strategies to add to the quality of your life. So welcome to episode 35, entitled More Resources for Modern Parenting. Yes, another episode to support the parents out there. I don't think you can ever have enough tools and enough information on how to help your children grow, develop, and navigate the complexities of modern life, because the world is moving so rapidly, so much is changing, and we are headed for an uncertain future like never before. So the ability to really ground in certain strategies for helping children feel confident, resourceful and resilient, I think is really fundamental to development going forward. And I really feel that we're going to need it, because the way our society is going, certain trends are, I guess, more likely to have a detrimental effect potentially on core things like attachment. Never before through the course of history have parents had to compete so early with external attachment attractions. When a child is born, and fundamentally, as we've mentioned in other episodes, authenticity and attachment are at the core of a child's development, and attachment trumps everything. I need to lock onto and attach to certain individuals in order, ideally, to secure my survival. And if that sometimes comes at the cost of my authenticity, then so be it. And unfortunately, some of us grow into adulthood and never shake that off, because we've become so associated with getting value out of our adaption that we struggle to recognize our authenticity or give ourselves permission to embrace and explore that element. And what we're finding these days is more and more with social media, children are switching to peer identification and leaving behind the attachment to the parents far more early. And so we're finding that children are meshing, you know, it's children raising children, so to speak. And this certainly does happen too when we've got parental figures who are steeped in wounds and trauma and neglect themselves that they're never addressed. Then, you know, it's still a case that we can have people who are in adult bodies but in effect are still children themselves, which is a tragic occurrence. But we're seeing more and more where children earlier and earlier are bonding with their peers at the expense of the traditional or biological bonding process. And that's due to the advent and the accessibility of our online process. And this is not a bashing of kind of where we're going in that regard. I mean, we're using things like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. These things are tools, but when they start to take over and run us, then we've got significant problems. And if from a very early age I am associating media and indeed the online realm with my attachment because it links me to my peers, then potentially we are looking at some challenges or a stunted developmental maturity, because I'm bonding way too early with my peers. I'm looking to my peers for guidance and no longer to my parents. And so it is really demanding and challenging for parents to stay in there and continue to foster healthy attachment with their children for as long as they can. And part of that, unfortunately, requires that we are in the, we're in the proximity of children. we're doing what we can to actually spend quality time with children, because the first thing we do as far as the stages of attachment, and I'm not going to go through all of them in this episode, but we will talk about just focusing on one of the core and central ones, which is that, you know, we bond through the senses. I can see my parents, I can hear them, I can touch them, and they can do the same to me. And so we know in the early stages, especially with toddlers and infants, there's this real absolute need. It's not a choice, it's a need to be in proximity with parental figures. And what we're finding, of course, with the demands of modern society is we're being pulled away from our children more and more because of the demands of work. And so this, unfortunately, subsequently starts to really threaten the quality of those bonds and attachments. And so being aware of this allows us to start to orchestrate in the best way we can an environment where we're spending as much time as possible with our kids, but we're also doing that where we're giving quality time, we're giving quality attention and quality presence. So I'm not spending my time, I'm in the proximity of my kids, but I'm actually on Facebook, or I'm sitting drinking a number of beers, so I've got a slightly altered state of consciousness. Neither of these we might be in the child's proximity, but we are certainly not present. So we're making sure that we're spending quality time with children, we're giving them the attention that they need, we're attuning to their emotional requirements, we're validating them, we're directing them. And these are the things that really add to keeping you healthily attached to your children for as long as possible. The good thing is, because sometimes we can look at this and go, oh my goodness, what chance do I have? You know, how can I compete with social media? What we've got to remember is that even though our environment is changing, our biology is still slow to catch up. And in this regard, thank goodness, biologically, we still want to connect. And so it's remembering that biology is on your side. Your children do want to connect with you, even though as a teen, when they start to go through those stages of attaching to peers, and you know, you suddenly swing from being the center of attention to the absolute polarity, because part of attachment is that it's difficult. You know, especially when we're in immature attachment, we can only bond with one or two key source figures, and we tend to shun and push away others. So once we can get to a place, if we've had it modeled to us, mature attachment, then we can have multiple comfortable attachments. But while a child is learning this, and we can see it as a toddler, you know, a toddler might be, as a stranger approaches, you know, moves closer into mum and dad, and actively, you know, with a hand or a pulling of the face, almost tries to repel the quote-unquote stranger as they appear. And that's just a natural part of attachment, that you know, it's too confusing to have too many attachment stimuli. But as we grow and we mature, we're able to begin to branch out and accommodate more aspects of attachment. But if we're allowing our children to, if you know, we're not doing what we can to keep that parental tie going for as long as possible, and more from a very young age, they're starting to take guidance from their peers, then it's the immature, underdeveloped, trying to, you know, we're taking our cues from other immature and undeveloped individuals, not because of anything other than, you know, that's just part of growth process. And what that means is that that's likely to stunt, you know, and inhibit developmental emotional developmental pathways. So we're looking to stick in there with our kids for as long as we possibly can, to still be a presence in their lives. And the key way that we start that is, you know, from the get-go, we're creating those moments where we are physically together and actually spending quality time. And we're not always coming from a place, you know, one of the good guidelines is here that, you know, we're not the kind of person, the kind of parent that sits constantly in an authoritative role where we're micro-directing children. We're never allowing children to express their own thoughts, or even if they do, we're not allowing children to explore those thoughts, but rather we're jumping in too early and offering corrective elements to that, so that they're not allowed to begin to develop problem-solving strategies, because we're constantly stepping in too early and telling them, you know, this is what you need to do, this is how you need to do it, and I don't want you, you know, you, we, they... they're not allowed to start to embrace their authenticity. It's a very directive style. And when we're coming from a place of cold directiveness all the time, again, there's no emotional attunement to that. There's no capacity. And so in the end, the child almost needs at some stage, this almost forces the child's hand into an oppositional stance. Because at some point I have to, in my development, start to embrace my own autonomy just as a natural process of growth. And my perception is the only way, you know, if I'm under too tight a controlled regime, so to speak, there's not enough inclusion of me from the get-go, but rather, you know, I'm almost raised like a staff member, and my emotional requirements or my contributions are constantly overridden, minimized, or ignored, then at some stage I've got no choice but to go and take up an oppositional, defiant, rebellious position, because I see it as the only way to find some autonomy under a too oppressive parenting structure. So that ironically, a parent's desire to discipline and constantly direct all their child's movements often ends up having the reverse effect, because the child has to find some space to breathe. And as I say, because they've not got any other way to do that but to swing in a very rebellious, oppositional way, then we really do set ourselves up for problems if we do not allow for enough warmth, attunement, and the natural development of a child, and giving children room to explore who they are, to test that out without that being instantly corrected or in somehow shamed or disapproved of, either verbally or non-verbally. You know, sometimes a look from a parent can be equally as scathing, if not more so, than, actual words. And by the same token, we're not swinging in the polarity where we offer no direction, no correctiveness, no insight. We become, you know, we become indulgent or negligent to the child's requirements. You know, if we allow children to express every emotion that they have to the nth degree, then this too becomes abusive, because we're not providing children with direction and parameters, boundaries, because these things add to a sense of a child's safety, not detract from it. So going completely the other way, where we're allowing of anything the child does, we're never pulling the child up for anything, we're never correcting anything or offering the child the chance to self-correct, but rather they're allowed to do whatever they want, whenever they want, and they're allowed to express every emotion to the nth degree. This is not helping them in any way, shape, or form either. It creates a different set of problems that can translate to things later where the child struggles with any sense of self-discipline, because they've never been shown how to be with their emotions but then process them in a useful way, but rather let the emotions drive everything. I'm not able to stay in a place where if I'm upset with somebody, I go into rage or frustration, rather than I can, you know, I might have those experiences where I feel anger, but I'm able to stay in a present place and talk that through with somebody. But I can't do that as an adult if I haven't been shown that as a child. So the optimal is that where the artistry is to find the balance between, directiveness and warmth. Because children actually need to have both sides modeled and presented to them, because that is a way in which we really support children, where we're providing parameters and guidelines, you know, useful tips, helping children to understand the world, because, you know, no matter what happens, children will they'll come to conclusions about whatever's going on around them. And they'll do the best they can with their developmental maturity and their thinking at the time. And so if we've got these channels of open communication, if we're fostering healthy attachment, then what that means is the child is more comfortable to come to us and speak. And when they share their view of the world, we're not jumping in too quickly and correcting that, but rather we're creating a space of psychological safety And that, to be perfectly honest, there's a bit of artistry in that. But it, this ideally gives you a bit of a guideline. Where am I headed to? And so, you know, when we get a sense that we're on point with our management of children, so that we are able to have a place of attachment with them, this is where, you know, that they are comfortable under stress or under challenge to come and seek us out. And sometimes they might not come and speak, they might just be in the space. And so we have to be really attuned to recognize what our child wants and how to best support our child, because they won't necessarily know how to ask for best support, even though they'll desperately require it. And we have to be okay that we're going to make some mistakes, and then we can own things, go back and recorrect. And because those are powerful tools to teach children too, you know, that we're able to say, look, I felt like I didn't handle that as well as I could have. It caught me by surprise. I was tired. I got overexcited, and I probably gave you more information than you needed. So could we have a redo? You know, and if we're modeling repair, healthy repair and healthy redo in our adult relationships with our primary partners, that too sets up children and demonstrates to children that it's okay. It's okay to make mistakes. They're not the end of the world. They can be adjusted from. We can make adjustments without crippling our self-esteem, and that we are all perfectly imperfect. So the idea here is to foster the combination of warmth and directiveness. So you need to be able to kind of check in with yourself and monitor. If that's the guideline, then, you know, all children are different. All children are going to require a slightly different balance of that. And, you know, if you've got multiple children, then you yourself already know intuitively how different your children are. And it's just watching to see and track, when I do certain things, what are the responses that I get from my kids, and what am I doing at those moments where I get the absolute best out of my children? They really want to be around me, they really want to talk. And even if children sometimes, especially those that are a little bit more driven to time alone, but we're still watching that balance to say, okay, what am I doing that ideally brings the best out in my kids? What have I done in the past that's probably caused my children to lash out in rage and hurt or withdraw from me? And then at the end of the day, when those moments happen, we're trying to minimize those, of course, with our own self-awareness. But we can only apologize and go through the process of repair and redo. But we're noticing, and we're noticing what it is. What am I doing when I get the best results from my children? When am I seeing my children at what I perceive them to be their flowing best? And maybe that's what I've noticed is after a couple of days when we're on holiday and we haven't got much social media going, we're keeping it limited. What I notice is, maybe we went away for a holiday at some point, and after a couple of days, we were able to really seek each other out and have joyous interaction on the beach. There was a lot of laughter. There was a lot of sharing. And there was a seeking out of closeness and connectedness. There was more touching. There was more hugging. And these are the things that we're looking to continue to do and foster. And it's simply a process of going, well, what are those moments under the roof where we had those best experiences? You know, we can create family soundtracks where we're helping to prime those experiences, because there's certain music that everybody loves to listen to together in the house. It creates a more up vibe and connected mood. You know, we can use music. We can look at, you know, how much time we're managing to spend with each other and what's the optimal use of that time. I notice my family does best when we do a bit of an activity and then we all come home and spend some time just sitting around together on the couch and talking and maybe looking at some books. So it really is that simple, that we're sort of doing a behavioural audit, if you like, and pairing that up with the responses that we've noticed in our children and the things that work and seem to foster attachment. Well, just do more of those. And where we've done things that inadvertently have kind of put a bit of a distance temporarily between us and the kids, then let's do less of that. And once in a while we are still going to inadvertently do things that temporarily put distance, then you're noticing too what are the ways where we've repaired in the past that seem to work best and bring about repair in the quickest possible ways. Maybe that's a hug and an owning of the things, and then we find that we're able to get back to good space quickly, compared to if I just try to ignore and brush over something and just try to get on with the day. I find that it takes longer for the children to thaw out again and come back into connection. So as comfortable as it is, it sometimes is, it's a really powerful skill to model to children when we can own that we haven't done something in the way that we'd like. You know, that really is service to children too. So as I say, the takeaways here are we're doing what we can to continue to keep that attachment between ourselves and our children as healthy and strong and secure for as long as we possibly can, knowing of course that we are competing against so many external variables, and one of the ways in which we do that is finding time, quality time to spend with children, and that we are really present for our children, that we're really demonstrating to them that they are valuable and they really mean something to us. Why? Because I'm here and I'm focused on you right now. And then the other element is, how do I continue to learn more and more how to be the kind of parent who can foster that healthy combination of being of directiveness, but with sufficient warmth and emotional nurture and attunement. So I wish you well. I really do. Like I said, the very fact that I did this particular episode is because I know just how challenging it is in the modern environment to raise children. So, you know, I'm really hopeful that this resource helps you. And as always, for those of you who've been listening along for lots of episodes, again, my absolute gratitude to you. If you've just joined the series, welcome. I hope you found the episode helpful. And if the way in which you continue to support the show, and everybody does, is to go to iTunes, download, subscribe, and leave a review. I'm available on Stitcher, Podbean, and other podcast mediums. And I really feel that these pieces of education are just so important. Anything that helps us make a demanding life easier has got to be valuable, I believe. And I just love the opportunity to kind of share these things because I find them profoundly interesting too. So I really hope you've got some practical value out of this episode. Once again, thank you so much for listening. And if you want to visit us at the website, it's emergencetraining.com.au. So until next time, bye.